I'm Dan Runcie, the host and founder of Trapital, and today we're going to talk all about your boy, Aubrey Drake Graham. And yes, we're using government names because that's apparently the energy that we're on. Last week, Drake gave us a Thanksgiving special. In a 24-hour span, he put out two legal actions against his record label, Universal Music Group, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and more. The claims include the use of inflated streams, bots, payola, and more to promote a song that he believes defamed his character, specifically this song.
They not like us. They not like us. They not like us.
Now, there's a lot to get into about the legal aspects of the potential lawsuit and how we think it may play out, but there's a bigger question here. What's Drake's endgame here? What's the goal? How does this play out in a way that we think it may benefit his career? And listen, it is easy to pile on someone that clearly lost a rap beef the way that Drake has in 2024, but is there more that we can actually dig into here if we try to put ourselves in the OVO camp and see where they're coming from? So to do that, I'm joined by Brian Z. Zizek, the co-founder of AudioMac. We broke down all of this and more. So hope you enjoy. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is presented by State Farm. When you start a new business, your first reaction might be to say, woohoo, yes, or booyah. But one thing to say that could be a huge help is, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, State Farm will be there with the coverage that fits your need, whether your business is growing or just open its doors. State Farm agents are small business owners too, so they know what it takes. They can help you create an insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. And when you need help, State Farm is there to answer your small business questions or help you file a claim and get you back in business. With State Farm, you can worry less about the unexpected and focus more on your business. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is helping you achieve your goals. And just say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. All right, we're here with AudioMac co-founder Brian Z. Zizek, who is ironically wearing an Interscope Records hoodie today.
I swear, I got dressed in the dark. I'm wearing blue jeans and I needed something light on top. And I just grabbed this. And then I realized that we were going to be taping this podcast today and obviously how this would look. I'm not Team Kendrick, I swear. Interscope was just nice enough to send this to me a couple of years ago.
Hey, you might get legal action taken against you for wearing this. We got to watch out. Listen, we know it's been a tough year for Drake. This guy has been used to winning for the past 15 years. He's gotten the equivalent of a Michael Jordan getting superstar treatment on the Chicago Bulls. He's been getting that with the record labels, the DSPs, everyone he's been partnered with. 2024 wasn't your year. Take a step back. Let Kendrick have the next few months, have a Super Bowl moment, and come back next year. Let people miss you a bit. But our boy Aubrey Graham did not do that. Why? Why couldn't he do that?
If I had to put myself in his shoes, I don't think he knows how. As you mentioned, he has been a fixture in our everyday lives, whether that's through releasing music or on social media, Instagram specifically, for well over a decade. So this idea that you could go from being a constant to being gone, whether that's for a month or 6 months or a year, even if it would have been in his best interest, is such a foreign concept to him. And so I think a lot of this is simply behavioral, right? How do you go away and make people miss you when that has never been a part of the game plan that you have expertly played out over this long period of time?
Because there are artists that are commercially successful, that are superstars, that do the let me drop something and go away. Kendrick has been one of those artists, as you've seen. But as you called out, Drake's never done that. Even if he's gone a little bit of time between albums, he's still given us the mixtapes. He's still given us the 2-packs and 3-packs. He's given us these Lucy's and always found a way to just stay relevant or timely or being in this movie appearance or this commercial. He's never not been away from the spotlight dating back to the Degrassi days.
That's the Drake blueprint, saturating the market and always giving his fans new music and always being a talking point on social media. And to expect different after that blueprint has given him the career it has and the success that he's achieved would be an entirely foreign concept.
So let's get into it. He gave us a Thanksgiving special. He took two legal actions in what seemed to be potential intent to file a lawsuit. We'll see. This is clearly an initial step, and it sounds like his attorneys are pursuing this to A, gather information, but also see if there is interest to pursue this further. But I know you've dug into each of these, so let's get a high level on what the first legal action is and what the second legal action is.
First legal action was not in his own name, but in the name of his LLC, which is Frozen Moments. And that was filed in New York. And in New York, you are required to file a petition, like a pre-filing, before you actually file a full-fledged lawsuit. In it are named UMG, which is the company that he has a licensing agreement with through the UMG-owned Republic Records, as well as Spotify. And he accuses these parties of colluding to ensure that Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us became the global hit that it did. That collusion, he accuses them of, was accomplished through various means, including but not limited to botting, which is the artificial manipulation of a song on a streaming service wherein actual humans are not doing the listening, but a machine is. Typically, this botting occurs up to about the 30-second mark. Why is that number important? That's how long someone needs to listen for an individual stream to be considered monetizable, meaning royalty bearing. He also makes the accusation that UMG worked in cahoots with individual playlisters at Apple Music, a competitor of Spotify, as well as AudioMac. And then you also have the accusation that UMG paid for influencers and social media accounts to discuss and amplify and evangelize Not Like Us to the highest degree. This was paid for, but not concealed to the public, meaning it was not apparent that this was like paid for content, which on social media platforms, if you are accepting money to post about a product or service, you are supposed to disclose this information to your audience. There are other charges that basically state UMG and Drake discussed all this earlier this year. UMG's position was there's nothing that we're hiding, but if you have a problem, you should sue Mr. Duckworth, Kendrick Lamar. Drake said, I'm not doing that. And then they said, if you don't sue him and you sue us, we're going to sue Kendrick, which I don't entirely understand, because if I'm Drake and that was their retort, I would go, okay, cool. Sounds good to me. So that's an overview of the first filing. The second was filed in Texas. And in this case, the petitioner was not Frozen Moments LLC. It was Drake. And in this case, UMG is once again named, as well as iHeartMedia, which is the parent company of iHeartRadio. It is a media conglomerate that owns hundreds of radio stations across the country. The accusation here is that UMG engaged in payola with iHeart. For those who are unaware, payola is illegal, and that is where the record label is giving money, either directly or through a third party. It doesn't have to actually be cash. It used to be hookers and blow. It could be trips. It could be other perks, courtside seats at a Lakers game. You get the idea. In exchange for increasing the airplay, so the number of spins across all of iHeart's owned and operated stations across the country. In this case, there was also a defamation claim made as well, stating that at the time that UMG engaged with iHeart, specifically to amplify the popularity of Not Like Us, that UMG was fully aware of the insinuations that Kendrick made in the record, and that they moved forward knowingly, despite the fact that the claims were untrue. So a lot of juicy stuff in there. Of course, Dan, the question now is, where will any of this go?
We should talk about the first legal action claim there, because I look at this similar to let's say if the 2001 New York Yankees were to have sued the Arizona Diamondbacks that had beat them in the World Series because the Yankees believed that Luis Gonzalez was taking performance-enhancing drugs, which had enhanced his performance during that World Series victory. The steroid era, I believe, is very similar to what we see now in streaming, where there are a lot of juiced stats that happen because Drake could have a point, because I can't sit here and say one way or another whether or not Like Us was juiced. I've heard certain things, but I also know enough to know that it is not unique that these practices may happen to Not Like Us or Kendrick Lamar, because some of these same practices have also likely benefited Aubrey Drake Graham as well with the success that he's had. It wasn't too long ago, when was it, in 2018, when Scorpion came out and he was on every single Spotify playlist that you could imagine, and some people asked for refunds from Spotify because they felt like they were overly promoting his music. So this is kind of part of the game, especially if you're working with artists that are part of the major label system. Some of the inflation that they have, they may not even be aware of. No different than a baseball player in that steroids time frame where their team is just giving them stuff and they don't know what's there. If the table stakes is that everyone is doing it, then it becomes a pretty common thing. That said, I know there are certain above board things that I think you spoke about in your Rolling Stone interview, like discovery mode, or even more broadly, the advances that record labels have with the DSPs. And oftentimes those agreements have concessions where, hey, can we get a little bit less if that gives us more algorithm favorability on your DSP? Those things do happen. So I don't doubt that there could be a chance that could have benefited Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us in this situation, but can we also say that it didn't benefit God's Plan or One Dance or Hotline Bling? That's where it's one pot calling the kettle black, potentially.
Yeah, it's the classic don't throw stones inside of a glass house. We'll use all of these analogies because they're all appropriate here. Yes, the claim in the New York filing states that UMG and Spotify agreed to allow for Not Like Us to receive a lower royalty rate, specifically 30% lower. 30% being the exact same lowered royalty rate that you would accept if you opted into Spotify's discovery mode, which is a service that effectively allows them to recommend your music to more people across the streaming service. Discovery mode was initially built as a tool for up-and-coming, developing, independent artists who were struggling to get traction and were looking for an upper hand. And the rationale was, if I'm able to take less in royalties but get more listeners, that's a trade-off I'm willing to make, because the lower royalty rate only applies to streams derived directly through discovery mode, not through all means, including but not limited to listener library, offline listening, editorial playlists, UGC playlists, etc.
Again, discovery mode is one of those things that Drake is likely benefited from too. And he's also likely benefited from having paid marketing done to influencers and others for his music, especially the ones that have been very successful. We've all seen the relationship that Drake has with DJ Academics. Academics has almost became a bit of a Drake insider with certain things. And I'm not saying Academics is necessarily involved with this or not, but these types of things aren't common to have quote unquote blogs on payroll. So again, people are going to talk about the biggest diss records that we've had in years. No different than how they talk about Family Matters, they're going to talk about Not Like Us too.
You're right. And this is not new. Does it make it right? Obviously, that's a moral question and an entirely different conversation. A few years back, Warner Music Group purchased Hip Hop DX and UpRocks. At the time, their strategy was to own and operate media and then use these platforms to amplify the artists on their roster, in particular, the newly signed artists. It is very difficult when you're signing a developing act to get them looks, whether that be coverage or interviews. It's a little bit easier when you own and operate the platforms themselves to cover video releases, tour announcements, number one albums, etc. So this has been all out in the open. And I'm not going to name any names. Anyone who's worked in the record business knows that whether it's influencers or Instagram or X, labels have utilized every means necessary to get their signed artists as many looks as possible, which is the job of the label. In the digital world, this exists largely on social media. The claim that Drake seems to be making through his legal representation in the filing, though, is that through some of these various means, there should have been disclosures. It should have been made clear to fans that the only reason certain accounts were discussing Not Like Us ad nauseum was because they were being paid to do so.
And I do understand the distinction and pushback. It would be tough to say that he hasn't also benefited from it himself, but it leads to this broader conversation around whether or not advertising, especially as it's done through social media, is always being said as much. And frankly, there are certain things that people do pay and they don't necessarily want to be disclosed as such because it would ruin the mystique that a lot of people want things to appear to be earned, even if it actually was paid for.
And I get the frustration. It's difficult to have any sort of trust when the perception is that anything that you come across, that you scroll past inside or out of your feed, isn't organic. That sucks. And this is a reality, though, that we have been battling for several years. It is a reality that exists outside of the music business. Now, does it make it right or wrong? I don't really want to have that conversation. What upsets me in all of this, though, is Kendrick and Drake, they don't really need much help. They're Kendrick Lamar and Drake. They have both been beneficiaries of everything that has transpired over the past year, despite what the filings that Drake's legal team have suggested. The losers here, in addition to the consumer who I guess now further doesn't know what to believe, are all of the artists whose music hasn't been consumed because of this being a distraction. And specifically as it relates to the charge of botting, the true impact is on the service and the artist. From the service's perspective, you end up paying out royalties to the rights holders, in this case, the labels, and they are for songs that humans didn't listen to, right? So that's money coming out of the service to pay for artificial plays. And that I take umbrage with, because as a platform operator at AudioMac, we have taken multiple steps, some painstakingly, to prevent what we call in the building juicing, and to dissuade those who have previously partaken in juicing from continuing to do so. It is a violation of any DSP's terms of service. It can lead to the music coming down from the service, the artist's profile being removed from the service, the relationship that the DSP has with their label being impacted. Spotify last year came out and said, if we find that your streams have been manipulated past a certain threshold, I think it's 90%, which is outrageous. You could cheat up to 89%. Once you cross 90, that's a step too far, that they will fine the distributor who delivered those products to the service. And companies like TuneCore and DistroKid, which are broad spectrum self-upload distribution partners, they're like, we don't want to have to pay, so we'll just cut bait. Meaning we'll take down your music, you, the independent developing artist, we'll take down your music from this streaming service because that beats having to pay these fines, if you will. And what's sad, Dan, is in most cases, those who have been impacted actually did nothing wrong. They were innocent bystanders, meaning rather than just the individual songs being botted. So let's say Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us was added to Spotify's Rap Caviar, the preeminent hip hop playlist on their service. Someone else who had a song on that same playlist could use a third-party marketing company to bot not just their song, but every song on the entirety of that playlist to mask who the true culprit was. Because then it looks like they all were involved. And this happens. It happens on Spotify. It happens on AudioMac. And again, all streamers are taking steps to identify and prevent this behavior. I'm not saying that this is what happened here. I'm saying it's very possible, it's very likely. It's also very likely that Kendrick and his team have no idea.
It's a thing that ends up hurting a lot of indie artists or artists that are trying to do things above board and trying to play the more traditional game. However, it is still interesting, though, that it's Drake, the person whose whole entire image is built on reputation and how people view him in the public light, given him even taking legal action in this type of way to begin with, bringing back the juicing and steroid analogy. What is Drake's endgame of him trying to be the Jose Canseco in this type of situation to go release tell all and go call others out? Because even though years later, Jose Canseco was right with a lot of that stuff, he had to deal with a huge reputational hit and becoming a pariah, and especially calling out Alex Rodriguez, and then A-Rod's like, no, I never took steroids. Then years later, it's like, oh, yeah, I did. It's not like years later, Canseco, it's not like his reputation grew. I'm not saying that don't be a whistleblower, but because it wasn't brought up in this situation that was completely removed of Drake's own claims and Drake's own involvement in this whole type of affair, what was his endgame of calling out these issues that, again, likely benefited him and others across the landscape?
Yeah, anyone who's making Drake out to be a martyr here is off base, in my opinion. And what sort of tips you off is in the clause, in the filing, it states specifically that it damaged Drake. That would have been a great opportunity to say that it greatly impacted all artists on the service, as it moved both monetization and real estate away from equally deserving artists, or something akin to, I might be the one who is voicing this, but I'm actually speaking on behalf of the entirety of the artist creator community. And that wasn't what was written, nor is that what I feel was implied.
You brought up the point about Drake feeling that there could have been either a hit to his back catalog or some type of decline in his music being played, and therefore the amount of money that he was able to make as a result of the amplification of Not Like Us and the support that he feels was claimed to Kendrick Lamar. So I looked at the stats here. So a year ago at this point in 2023, Drake had around 85 million Spotify monthly listeners. He now has 73 million. So there is a dip there. The challenge, though, is that it is very hard to isolate these types of things because Drake was on a tour, a very commercially successful tour that he was doing back-to-back nights in some of the biggest markets in the United States and around the world. And he had more recently released music than he was at this particular point. Meanwhile, Kendrick Lamar, a year ago, at this point, had 50 million Spotify monthly listeners. He now has 64 million, I believe, right around June. Peak Not Like Us streaming everywhere. He was very close to Drake in the mid-70s at that point. But still, it was a pretty big dip in terms of where things are at now. So again, I do think that it's very difficult for Drake to be able to make this claim, just given all the other factors. This isn't a payola type of thing where radio play is a very zero-sum thing, where if you're not playing the song from one artist, you can only play the song from another artist. Streaming is much more broad, so I just think it's a little bit different and a little bit of a harder thing for him to be able to claim here.
I agree. As you articulated, when it comes to specifically using monthly listener data, It's hard to gauge, given that what that number represents effectively is the number of individual users who have listened to at least one song that is associated with your profile at least once for at least 30 seconds, once over the 28-day period. And so there's a natural ebb and flow based on increase in editorial playlist ads following an album drop. As you mentioned, being on tour, you're going to see a spike based on back catalog being performed, which
which always will reinvigorate streaming numbers. But again, the drop off from last year to this year, only looking at Drake, you'd be hard pressed to make the case that it has greatly impacted the consumption of his music, because it has not.
In one ways, it made me think, okay, Drake could be forgetting that he is the single artist that has driven more revenue for the largest DSP and the largest record label more than any other artist in the past 15 years, give or take. But again, if you're used to being in that position and there's any slight harm to what you feel as your top claim, you're probably going to take some issue with that.
If I were to play devil's advocate with you, Dan, that also makes him almost like the perfect individual to bring up these claims where he lost me, and where this is fumbled is he only made it about him and he didn't make it about the greater good, as a lot of his fans on social media are trying to convince others of, that this is Drake fighting for the little guy. If you read the filings, it's very clear that there is only one priority, and that is Drake. And as far as what the end game here is, I told Andre G at Rolling Stone this, it's hard for me to understand how money, because these would be civil suits, it's hard for me to understand how money could be the ultimate factor here when, first of all, Drake has a great career, as far as we can tell. All-time ticket sales, one of the top streamed artists in the world. So as far as we're aware, he's doing quite well. It's hard for me to believe that the pursuit of monetary compensation is worth the reputational harm he will have done to himself by even doing this. As someone who has listened to his music since the dawn of his career, that saddens me. No one wants to see anyone go out like this.
You called it out in that interview as well. You referred to it as the Streisand effect. This is exactly what this is. It further, I think, proves the craziness of thinking that UMG really wanted to hurt him, and instead of more broadly just trying to amplify a hit record when they do have one, and it just so incidentally happened to make a negative claim about Drake, which brings us to the second legal action here, which was filed by Drake as opposed to the Frozen Moments LLC, and he calling issue with the defamation claim. This one is interesting because, again, does this imply that Drake feels that, okay, if the same thing was brought up against him, then they would say that one of Kendrick Lamar's kids was actually Dave Free's kid, and you would have a test that would actually verify that? What are we actually trying to say here? It's a rap battle.
As much as I like to put on my entertainment lawyer cap on social media, a lot of the sentiments that I express are often based on consulting with veterans in that space. And I've talked to a few over the past few days, and the consensus has been, and this was also articulated by Kevin Cassini in the Rolling Stone piece, no idea. And we don't know enough yet there to even speculate. And this would also be completely unprecedented, right? As far as I'm aware, there has never been a scenario, at least high profile, where what has been said in a rap song, in the midst of a rap beef, the charges would be potentially filed in any capacity. But interestingly enough, then, as we know, Kendrick wasn't named in either of these petitions. And if I'm UMG or I'm iHeart, I'm coming out and saying, I didn't say those things.
Yeah, that is the distinction, right? He didn't sue Mr. Duckworth about this. He's saying that the labels amplified and knowingly released a track that had this type of claim against him, one of its artists.
And Dan, I think it's a slippery slope, right? Because what you're basically saying is, should a record label be responsible for vetting everything that is said in a song to ensure truthfulness in order to greenlight the release, marketing, and promotion of that song? And I don't think that there is a record label in the world that would agree to do that.
And it's also ironic, too, just given everything that we've seen go on with Young Thug and Gunna over the past couple of years, and how certain lyrics being played into some of their legal battles. And then more broadly, just whether or not rap lyrics should be admissible in the court of law if you're indicting someone or if you're trying to charge someone with a potential crime here. I've also heard the angle where some people thought that could this be an opportunity for Drake to try to get out of this deal, just given the massive deal that he had redid with Universal for his licensing deal. You and I talked about that deal the last time that you were on the show here. But again, there's only so many companies in the world that are going to give you that deal. Plus, you've had a relationship with this company for how long? So you're really just going to potentially jump ship and be like, oh, let me go work with Columbia or whoever it is right now. I also just don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening either. Obviously, that has been speculation that has run rampant, particularly on social media amongst fans. I won't pretend to have any insider information as it pertains to the status of his current deal in terms of what obligations he has left to fulfill before he would technically be a free agent or be eligible to renew the deal. I did confer with several lawyers who said, look, Drake's perhaps the most leveraged individual in the business outside of Taylor Swift. He would certainly not need to take these steps, these litigious steps, to file these petitions, which have already caused undue harm to his corporate label partner, just to attempt to gain the leverage that he sees as necessary to get more money or better terms in an extension or in a renewal. And in the process, of course, irreparably, potentially harm his relationship, as you said, with the partner that he has been with in some capacity. His deal has changed over time since the beginning of his career. I just don't buy that whatsoever. As an aside there also, and I do believe we covered this in our last conversation, people have no understanding whatsoever of how much money it costs to run the business of being Drake. And at this stage of his career, if the expectation is for him to continue to operate as a global superstar, it would be virtually impossible for him to do that independently. And there is no partner in the space who is better equipped to continue to be his partner than the partner that he's been with all along, which is Republic via UMG. So again, I don't buy that whatsoever.
This isn't a case where he's one of his NBA friends and go, oh, I no longer want to be on the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't deal with his management. Trade me to the Clippers. There's no Clippers to go to in this type of situation.
I love how you use the Clippers in your analogy, because typically when you go to the Clippers, nothing good really ever happens long term. And so whoever the Clippers are in our analogy here, yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And the first filing in New York suggested that he went to UMG at some point over the past few months or perhaps weeks to discuss this behind closed doors, which obviously tells us that their goal was to, I don't know how you resolve this necessarily, because it already happened, and that he was not satisfied with whatever they said in response, and that is what led him to the filing. And what that tells me is that this is not about the recording contract, because for this to move forward, I would have to believe that would need to be disclosed. The fact that he did this tells us with certainty that he still is under contract as well. A lot that we might or might not find out in the weeks and months to come, and at the very least, highly entertaining.
Z, always appreciate you. So thanks again for coming on, man.
Thank you, Dan. I love talking with you, and thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.